The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. And you're joined by Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
Nice Hi,
job.
Bob.
Nice job. We
Hi,
all got
Aaron.
Our microphones on.
Yeah, everybody sounds great.
Hi, Aaron. Hi, Bill.
And we have a hostage in the studio with us today. Usually we get to try to call them, and then they're sleeping, and, you know, we have all this
then we have to wake them up. And
the last 2 weeks, phone falderall.
Got them on the head.
No phone falderall today. We've got a live person here. So we have Dave Myers with us, who is the supervisor of the Shasta Trinity National Forest.
Well, thank you for having me on. It'll be great.
See, and for the people who live on the West Coast, they might actually know where that is, Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the farthest in Northern California, Klamath National Forest borders Oregon. But
and so does the MODOC.
Oh, yeah, true story. How far over do you go?
Well, we border the Klamath is to the north, and the MODOC is to the north and east. The Lassen National Forest touches us on the east side, and the Six Rivers touches us on the west side, and the Mendocino National Forest touches us on the south.
So we're basically surrounded.
We are. We are the largest national forest in California.
Oh.
So there.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's a fun fact. So for our folks that listen in Philadelphia, what do they have in Pennsylvania?
In Pennsylvania, it's the Allegheny National Forest, kind of central and north. North
and
central.
That's it?
Yes.
And then what about New Jersey? Doesn't have any forest, do they?
No.
I've driven through New Jersey a million times, and it's like, I don't remember seeing any forest.
No, there's a little factoid is for national forest systems, you know, national forests and grasslands.
Yeah.
There's 155 in the system. There's only like five or six in the United States that do not have a national forest or a grassland.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. I think you named one. I think Iowa is one. But, you know, pretty much all the western states, and actually most of the eastern states, because you have all that Appalachia range.
Right.
Yeah, true.
Right.
You know, it's all the way down to Florida, up to New York.
So we're going to try to keep it general. So we have a lot of people, you know, who hasn't been to the National Forest?
Well, if you go to our website, there's a nice little map there that kind of shows the size of the forest area there, and it shows the bordering areas as well, so you can kind of get an idea how big it is.
And with that, you know, it's 2.1 million acres. It's a big area.
Yeah.
It's not the biggest national forest in our system, but it's a big one, and the biggest in California.
As forests go,
Well,
we thought it would be timely to do this, just because we just got done with all the fires. Regardless of where you live, if you didn't live in the area with the fires, you at least had to hear about it all summer long. So we figured this would be a good time to get kind of going on this topic. So you've done this. You've only been here since 2013. You've only been here 2 years?
Yes, 2 years.
Hmm. How long were you in? You were 35 years ago you started this whole thing.
Yeah.
So you're like a career
Forest Service guy. Yeah, green.
Why?
I just love the Forest Service. I love working on national forests. You know, they're a great place to work.
Did your folks or something? How'd you wind up doing it?
You know, I just wanted to work in natural resources. I went to school at Humboldt State, North Coast.
Me too.
There you
go. A couple of alumni here.
Look at that, and we're not even smoking pot.
Go green.
We're not even smoking pot right now.
Yeah.
See, it can happen.
We think we remember going there.
and Bob's wife went there too. That's right.
That's right.
I was there 2 weeks ago. It smells the same.
Go marching lumberjacks.
I was a marching lumberjack.
Oh, so was my wife.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, I don't. We better change the subject.
Yeah.
Ann Palmer, do you remember her?
Was that in the 70s?
I was there in the 70s.
Late
too.
70s, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty funny.
I was there in the late 70s, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Like 70 when?
75 to 80.
I was there 79 to 84.
That's about when Ann was there, 79 to 84.
So it's a great natural resources school. I mean, forestry, I was in range management, wildlife, fisheries, hydrology.
There was a ton
going
on.
Some great programs over there.
Oh,
fantastic.
What a setting. School.
Great setting.
Still a
too.
Great school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was an English major. Makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get reminded of that regularly. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, okay.
You know, a lot of our leaders in the Forest Service went to Humboldt, so there. That's a good one.
Oh. But, well, really and truly, if you're going to work in that industry, where else are you going to go to school?
Cal Berkeley is one in California, Cal Poly. Mm-hmm. In the other western states, you know, UNR, University of Nevada, Reno, Utah State, University of Idaho, University of Wyoming.
So probably not East Coast, though, huh?
Oregon State. Well, no, there's forestry programs back there, too. You bet.
Mm-hmm. Just different stuff. You're managing different things. Here we have really tall trees. There they have kind of shorter.
Mm-hmm.
Just different issues. They don't have the big fires that we do.
No, the fire frequency is different there.
Is that because of the humidity?
It's just different geographical areas of the United States. So you have different climates
altogether.
So you have just like from Alaska down to here. Alaska is more like rainforest.
Right.
You know, fire return intervals, you know, in the hundreds and hundreds of years. And, you know, in Oak Savannah, where Redding is, it's every, you know, well, five, it's every year now,
every,
but it's
every 5 minutes.
5 years, you wanted a light fire to run under the trees and burn it out.
In the old days, it would just do that by itself?
Sure, yeah.
Plus or minus 5 years?
You know, ours has changed here just because it's all, you know, California's the Golden State, named that way because all the annual grass. It wasn't originally that way. It was perennial grass, so now we have higher fire frequency because it turns to straw when it dries out.
Yeah.
Right.
So that changed the fire intervals, the wildfires.
What about your ability to harvest in the forest and to manage it? If we're gonna suppress the fire, you kind of have to, you can't just let everything just grow and grow and grow.
Well, you know, yeah, that's a big question. So it's the...
That's the fight. That's the big fight in the western states.
Well, and it's come with the change in society, you know. Fire management, the Forest Service was Smokey the Bear, and you know we've been very successful at fighting natural wildfires for well over 100 years.
I like the way you said that, Smokey the Bear.
Yeah, Smokey Bear.
He's not supposed to be Smokey the Bear?
No, it's Smokey Bear.
He's still Smokey the Bear. He's been Smokey the Bear our whole life. That's stupid.
So, but fighting fire, we've been putting out, you know, wildfires. Lightning strikes naturally cause fires, which are generally lightning. For 100 years. So that in and by itself has changed the fire behavior, allowing what would have been smaller, more frequent fires now are larger and more high-intense fires in some of our forested ecosystems. So,
And they're more intense because of the...
Well, there's a lot of factors built into that. There's buildup of fuel accumulations when there's no wildfire. Some of it can be contributed, if you will, to climate change. Certainly with California, the fourth year of drought, that adds a real complicating factor. Usually it's that growth, even natural growth of smaller fir trees growing up in the understory that allow fires to move from the surface or a ground fire to what we call crown fires, where they're running through the tops of the trees under more severe fire weather conditions.
And you just can't get a hold of them?
No, you can't. Not when you have a running crown fire, when the factors align, and the factors being wind and topography and the trees align, and of course humidity, as you mentioned, and temperatures. When they align and it gets in the crowns and is really running, that's a fire that is very dangerous, and you just have to let that run and anchor and get on the flanks of that kind of fire until it sits down. So a lot of different types of fires. So all of our forests don't behave the same with fire. They all have their own different fire regimes and intervals of when wildfire would have naturally occurred.
And how much information do you have to know how to do everything? If you're going to be a forest supervisor, let's go backwards. How does that all lay out? You have guys in Washington, D.C. that are the chief.
We have one chief of the Forest Service, Tom Tidwell,
mm-hmm.
in Washington, D.C. By the way, that's not a political appointee. The chief has always come up through the ranks of the Forest Service. And we're proud of that as an agency.
Oh, yeah,
who decides that they're
going to
be the chief?
Well, it's still through the administration under the Secretary of Agriculture.
Okay.
And so Secretary Vilsack is our Secretary of Agriculture right now.
But they always draw from the Forest Service.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a
great idea.
And so currently, Tom Tidwell started as a range management specialist, working with, like I did, with permitted livestock grazing on national forests in Idaho. And he worked in Nevada. I worked with him in Utah. And he, you know, he was in California as a deputy regional forester. Hmm. He was the regional forester in Missoula, Montana, and then became chief, you know, so really built a career, so he's highly experienced going in to hold that position as chief.
Okay.
So from the chief down, then you go down to the regional foresters, and there's our region is California, and so Randy Moore is our regional forester, and that office is down in Vallejo, or actually out of Mare Island at the very end.
Okay.
Yeah. And so he does all of California?
Mm-hmm.
All the forests in California?
Yeah, and he's my supervisor.
And so do all forests stop at state lines, or
no.
Do some go over?
Some do go over.
Because it's a federal thing. It doesn't have to be
yeah.
state by state, right?
That's correct. And regions go over, you know, depending on how they're Oregon, Washington, or region. California just has so many national forests for a region.
So if you are a regional guy, then you might, do you do a number of forests, not a state necessarily?
That's correct. We just coordinate closely with the states.
Yeah. How many regions are there?
There are 8.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so they definitely aren't limited to a state.
Right.
Shoot.
Yeah.
And then forest supervisor, how far are you away from the regional guy? What do you have
I'm
in between?
I'm directly under the regional forester.
Okay. And you guys are just on one forest. You're the supervisor of that one forest.
Of the Shasta Trinity.
Okay.
So, you know, as an agency, as we call ourselves line officers, the actually deciding officer. It goes from the chief mm-hmm. to the regional forester to myself, a forest supervisor, to a district ranger. So pretty short chain of command, 4 people, and you're down to the district ranger, who is the person, man and woman or women on the ground. And we have 4 districts on the Shasta Trinity.
And is that pretty? Is it just based on the particular forest? How many?
Yes.
How many?
Yeah, just
the size.
Has
divided up.
You know, we're at Mount Shasta. We're in Weaverville, Mountain Gate for Lake Shasta here, and Hay Fork. Those are our main offices, besides my office here in Redding.
Hmm. Well, that makes sense.
All right. Let's take
a
break.
So then we're going to find out what you guys do when we come back. We need to take a quick break here. Are we good, Bob?
Yes, we're good.
I'm trying to read the back of your head.
the light's not on
before
yet.
Before we just, like, stop and there's no sound. You can find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Everything about the shows, archives, sponsorship, ideas. If you've got ideas for programs and guests, please get a hold of us. We'd love to hear from you.
What shall we do about them?
There you go, our first forest song. We're going to have a litany of forest songs.
A laughing forest.
I thought we were going on the Humboldt State theme there for a second.
Well, you are. It's a laughing forest.
That's where I thought we were.
A lot of laughing over there.
I got confused.
Yeah, a lot of giggling and chortling.
Welcome back. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with Dave Myers. He is our local forest supervisor here on the Shasta Trinity National Forest. And for those of you who don't live in our area, you should listen anyway because there's probably a forest near you. There's only, what'd you say,
right.
5 states?
You want to know how it works?
5 states that don't have forests?
Right.
Yeah, so see, this is information for everyone.
Yep.
And you had a bunch of stats on fire.
Yeah, we just, you
the
know,
number of fires.
We just went through one heck of a fire season.
One heck. You know,
yeah.
We were doing pretty good catching our lightning-caused and human-caused fires. We had waves of lightning, as you know, came through. First started in June. And
that's what kind of set the whole thing off. To start with, wasn't it, or were there some arson fires?
Well, there weren't arson. They were just man-caused, you know, escape.
People being dopey?
It was so dry with the drought.
Lawnmowers and
just chains dragging, things
yeah.
like that, and just carelessness with matches or whatever. But the lightning, you know, we had a wave of in June, and only one of those fires escaped our initial attack. That's what we call it when we initially attack, either with smoke jumpers, retardant planes. We rappel out of helicopters on ropes, and, of course, our fire engines and our firefighters on the ground, 20-person crews. We caught everything. One got away in June, and it got up to a couple thousand acres. And then
that's
we had another wave, and we caught all those, and another wave, and we caught all those in initial attack. Well, that ended on July 30th when the fourth wave came in with all that lightning that started. When our planes are up in the air looking, when we're getting the lightning, and the reports were coming back over 100 lines of smoke popping out of the woods, that's a bad day.
Yeah,
because
you can't possibly get on top of all those.
We initial attacked, and we just couldn't. So that started, you know, in total we had 229 fires, but after that day started our longer fire siege, which lasted a couple months. Those fires grew together, you know, they all took off the next day with winds that hit them, and they grew and they came together, and we had five large fire complexes. We call them a complex when like three or four fires were kind of in the same proximity.
Mm-hmm.
And they were large. Between our forest and the Six Rivers, which borders us on a ridgeline to the west. So, we threw everything at it, you know, because it was a drought. You know, we weren't doing anything but trying our best to protect people and protect our firefighters. And
you guys don't do houses, though.
We don't do structure protection.
Even if people live kind of near, because I think sometimes, especially people who live in cities, they think if it's the forest, it's miles and miles and miles from where anyone might live. But that's not actually true.
People live
kind of in and among the forest in a lot of places.
That's right. They have there's a lot of private land in holdings within surrounded by national forest system. So in this case, we lost eight homes on private land that was where fires burned off forest and swept through some private land.
Now, when you have structures that are amongst the forest. You don't fight those structure fires. Do you call in like CAL FIRE or do you just get the people out? And
we do our best first to get the people out, and we do coordinate very closely with CAL FIRE. So we'll fight a fire running at homes,
mm-hmm.
but we're just not a structural fire. So
right, your training's not in structural.
Yeah,
right.
You know, we have college kids that work for us. You know, we don't have the equipment nor the training to go inside burning structures. We battle wildfires running at a home, or if it starts in a home and then gets in the woods and goes,
right.
We battle those. So it was a long fire season. The fires burned and burned and burned in a primarily forested ecosystem. It was very droughty. And the challenge there is the fire behavior can be fairly extreme because of the drought we've had. And the large, even the green trees, not just dead, but green trees are, drought-stricken, so
burn very easily.
Very easily, and the fires will spot, meaning they'll throw burning embers a quarter, half mile ahead if they're burning in crown fire conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And the only fortunate thing associated with the fire behavior this year was it was so smoky. The fires had inversions over them, so it kept what I call the lid on the fires. A smoke layer so thick that it prevented the fires from burning with high intensity.
Oh, really? I didn't know that affected the actual intensity of
fire. That's actually helpful?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Well, helpful in that it keeps the oxygen and sunlight from
slows it down,
the
but
fire.
It's not helpful
yeah,
in trying to
true.
Fight it because you can't get in there and see it, right?
No, we can get in and fight. You just got to be real careful when the lid comes off because then it's up and away she goes that afternoon.
Right.
So you're always real careful about how extended you are out there on the lines, the fire lines being the where we remove the vegetation next to the fire so mm-hmm. it won't cross those.
Do you guys kind of keep track forest to forest, you know, who's got the most fires in any given year and all that?
We do. The challenge this year when it was not only California on fire and the forests around us,
big.
But Oregon picked
yeah.
up, the state of Washington picked up at the same time, and Idaho. So there was a shortage of firefighting resources between the federal and the state agencies.
We kind of talked about that. I was going to just let people know that on the website, I put a link that I didn't think of until just now, but we did a show with one of your former coworkers, Ray Haupt, on August 16th.
Mm-hmm.
We did a program on fire. Who fights what? What do the federal resources do? What do the state resources do? Why do, what are they situated for and how does it divvy out? So if people are curious about you know, some of the detail of that. We did a two-hour program on it, and the link's right there for you. We also linked a bunch of resources because it's kind of interesting, and nobody really knows. Yeah. You know, the rest of us out here, we don't.
I got a question.
We don't worry
how
about
do
that
you,
stuff.
How do you name these fires?
The first firefighters on the ground usually name them.
Some of them are kind of funny.
Yeah, some things I kind of got to watch to make sure the names are okay.
Yeah.
Appropriate names?
Yeah. You know, but it's usually after some geographical feature.
Right.
There.
I noticed some of them are geographically kind of, symbolic of a
terrain. Yeah, but
terrain
some of the names are kind of funny.
Right.
A creek or something.
Yeah. The Fort Complex was right near Hayfork.
Okay.
You know, the Mad Complex was over by Mad River.
Okay.
So those are okay.
Yeah, we can go with
nothing
those.
Bad there.
No.
So what percentage were caused by people or numbers? You had some numbers.
Yeah, we had, of the 229, 70 were human caused, which is, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
Mm-hmm. You know, especially when, it's well known we're in a drought, extremely flammable out there.
Yeah, over a third of them started by carelessness.
Carelessness.
Not good.
159 of those were lightning caused. And again, we caught all those initial attacks except for 24. But those 24, when they grow, they become large
monsters,
incidents.
Yeah.
And then we bring in management teams to assist and really to do the lead the operations to suppress those fires.
And so, kind of acreage lost.
We were right at 188,000 acres. That's a lot of acres. Mm-hmm. Some of the fires in other states, like up in Washington, grew larger. That acre number can be misleading because, you can have a fire in eastern Washington or in Nevada, and it's burning a lot of grass and sage, and it can sweep through 100,000 acres.
I was going to say, 100,000 doesn't sound like a lot when you look at the size of some of these other fires that burn for months, and they're one fire is over 100,000.
Yeah. Our fires are burning in heavy fuels, not to mention heavy brush, the chaparral brushes, that we have. But those heavy fuels being trees, Douglas fir, ponderosa pine, the white firs that have, up to 3 feet, diameters at the base. They burn and burn and burn. And so all fires don't behave the same. Some are flashier. And some of the lighter fuels are as dangerous or more dangerous to our firefighters, especially in the initial attack, because of the wind.
They go so fast.
Wind changes, and we lost firefighters this year.
Mm.
Here in Northern California, over on the Modoc, with a fire blew up. That was in Ponderosa Pine. We lost firefighters in fire engines up in Washington because of these erratic changes and extreme fire behavior.
Well, you can't fight a fire from the ground once it gets into the crown and starts going through the treetops. That's pretty much an aerial battle at that point, isn't it?
It is. Just even using retardant in front of a running crown fire is something that probably wouldn't be that successful anyway because it spots so far over it. But we do use retardant. We flew more gallons of retardant out of Redding than I think almost any other year ever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that number, but it's, millions.
Well, you're using that
gallons.
Big jet now, too, that holds a lot.
Yeah, just the biggest jets. Well, not the biggest, but, 727s were frequently flying out of here. So not
That's
just...
That's pretty big.
Yeah, we were using, just 10 years ago, it was primarily some of the old Korean War vintage retrofitted heavy retardant planes, turboprops. Those planes take a lot of stress when they're dropping loads and releasing and that stress and torque on their wings. So we've had to upgrade the retardant planes. The challenge there is it's extremely expensive, firefighting. Retardant is one of those. The aviation costs are one of our highest line items for fighting fire.
Oh, sure. Those jets are expensive to fly.
Jets, helicopters are really expensive. We have, heavy helicopters drop 300 gallons in a bucket.
Maintenance on helicopters is horrendous.
So, but we used everything we had this year.
People, trucks.
Oh, man.
Some of these places, when you hear these massive numbers of acreage that we wind up losing, it's not always visible for people driving through the forest because a lot of it, I was just looking at some of the numbers, total wilderness area in your particular forest, 498,000 acres.
Mm-hmm.
So if it burned up in there, that you're only going to see that on foot.
Right.
You're not going to drive through there.
Right. So Our fires burned in a lot of roaded areas this year. What we're doing now is looking to improve the safety on those roads because we have standing dead trees. That creates a dangerous situation for the traveling public on our forest roads. Most of those are dirt roads.
Sure.
But, you know, we have a lot. That's what people use when they visit the forest is they travel on dirt roads. Mm-hmm. And so we'll do what we call salvage operations, meaning we salvage the dead trees for lumber. And through competitive bid processes, local lumber mills will bid on those and have a logging operation to remove those.
So in our next segment, that's the $64,000 question.
Yeah, we're going to take a break, but that's something I really want to get into.
Yeah, because everybody wants to know, why can't you just get out there
salvaging more than what we do?
Okay, yeah, we'll talk about that.
Because I know, I can hear people in the back of my head going, yeah, what are they doing about that?
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about that next. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Joining We the People. You can find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. And we have all tons of archives for, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, something like that. And all our shows are fun. We talk about subjects that make you angry, but then we try to goof off a little bit so that you're not actually angry by the time we've done.
You get madder, but at least you're laughing.
At least you sort of had fun while you were doing it. Yeah.
I like this music he's playing.
Yeah, yeah. That's the comic relief that gives us a little break from the, you know.
Is he going to play Smoke on the Water next?
don't ruin
it. I'm sure it's on the list.
Don't ruin his lineup.
There's more.
We take requests.
Okay. We found some good ones over the years. I think the program we did about eggs had, like, the best music, because there were a lot of chicken songs.
Oh.
There were a lot of chicken songs. I had no idea there were that many chicken songs. That was a fun show, too.
Yeah.
Hey, So what's the deal with the harvesting of the burned trees? Talk to us about that. People want somebody to get out there and hurry up and use the wood.
Yeah, so whether trees are killed by wildfire or often depending on where you're at in the west, my last forest we had large acres, I mean thousands killed by bark beetles.
Mm-hmm.
That was lodgepole pine. Mm. We're a natural process, by the way. The pine beetles get in there and in drought situations and kill the trees. And so in the Forest Service, we do salvage operations because you're salvaging a dead tree where appropriate for lumber and then try, you know, reduce the fuel and regenerate the forest. So we do that, and we are often and frequently challenged on that. Challenged by that by individuals who are allowed to appeal, object, litigate our projects because it is public land, and so you have the say in how we manage that, and that's what happens. The challenge, the big challenge is, when we get challenged on a lot of our projects associated with timber management, if you will, timber sales.
Yeah, some environmentalist group, I mean, most of our environmentalist groups don't want us to harvest anything. I mean, that's kind of their goal anymore.
You know, the That has changed.
I'll just be the hater.
You can be that. But so that has changed over the years, where some of those groups are actually supporting us for forest management because they see the devastating effects of these large wildfires burning with higher fire intensities than they have in the past. Yet there are still those entities that tend to litigate us. Mm-hmm. And I am...
So you get litigation for harvesting? Because a lot of what I hear is, why aren't we going in and taking more of this burnt wood that is left standing? And you know, you only have a certain amount of time to get that wood out before there's no market value to it. And I think a good example was up at Wairika, the big fire they had up there a year or two ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, over 100,000 acres burned up there, and very little of that was ever harvested. And I know a lot of it was on steep terrain, difficult to get to.
Yeah, but like they put a project together it was 5% of the fire. And that still isn't done.
Yeah, and
that's been a year.
It just seems like an incredible waste of resource, because that wood is marketable up to a point. So what I hear, and my day job, I work a lot with logging.
Bill sells equipment that cuts down trees.
Don't give me up. I'll be getting hate mail. But you know, why don't we have larger timber sales and more of them to because I mean, those trees aren't going to grow back. They're going to be the zombie trees we talk about that are just there and bug ridden, and so
yeah. So it is one of the more challenging types of projects to get through because of what you've mentioned. What you're saying is accurate. There's a lot of our planning that goes into salvaging dead and dying trees. It is litigated, and if we don't get the wood out, so to speak, you know, the harvesting occurring, especially on our forest and in California, within a year, that wood does degenerate.
Yeah,
and it starts a rotting process naturally. It gets blue stains in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a wood borer that bores holes the size of your thumb in it, and it ruins the wood lumber value. So there's a time frame that we work on, and so I know the fire you mentioned on the Klamath National Forest to the north, the Forest Service does have an aggressive plan putting together a salvage sale. Now, the challenge that I have, too, because I'm doing it now following our fires this year, is that it does still require, even though it's a short time frame that we have, we still have to move through the planning process regulated by law, National Environmental Policy Act. Around this country, Klamath has it, the Shasta Trinity has it, the Six Rivers has it.
Stupid spotted owl.
I was going to say northern spotted owl, but you said...
Yeah, stupid spotted owl.
So
yeah.
A threatened species, right?
Yeah.
Under the Endangered Species Act. Well, it is.
The more we help them, the fewer we have, but let's not let that get in the way.
But it's not a choice as forest supervisor where I...
Right, right. You didn't
I have to
make it up.
Manage the habitat. We certainly manage the habitat for that species. It's threatened, and it's even being considered for endangered. So that even elevates the concern for that species when you have a species where you're trying to salvage the burned timber, yet it's also the habitat right there.
But there's no habitat left in a lot of these areas. I mean, they're just poles.
Yeah, so it's all the short-term impacts versus long-term benefits.
Is it the exact same? How do I want to say that? Okay, if the trees were green, no fire, everything was fine, and you were going to go in and manage that swath of land.
Yeah, because on private...
Versus burned down.
Yeah, on private ground, they have like emergency, I don't know if it's emergency management or whatever it is, but if a fire goes through on private ground, it's a different process to go in and get a harvest plan put together and get that wood out a lot quicker than a regular harvest plan where you would...
do you get a break?
It could take 2 years somehow to get a harvest plan. Is it the same procedures if a fire goes through than if it's greenwood?
For us, it is. Now, of course, we deal with a different set of laws, especially NEPA, the National Rural Policy Act, and our objection process, and we do get litigated more than on state lands, or on private lands, excuse me. But the process is the same even managing green forest, which we have. We do that. We have timber sales, integrated veg, so we reduce fuels at the same time. And we still manage under the same laws, National Environmental Policy Act, you know, meeting compliance with Clean Water Act, you know, endangered species. National Historic Preservation Act, you know, for archaeology. So here it is complicated.
You can hear the clock ticking. Like, oh. just takes forever.
But after a fire goes through, your environment is so much different than the environment you're dealing with when you're cutting green timber. I mean, I can
absolutely
see where...
But the rules are the same.
You have to be concerned about erosion and you know, your footprint and all that. When a fire goes through, you have no control over erosion at that point. That ground is down to the dirt. And I mean, do you still have to be careful not to get mud in the streams and all? I mean, it's going to happen at that point, no matter what you do.
Yeah, certainly we're always concerned about it. And we'll, even after wildfires, we take measures to try to do erosion control. You know, but yes, we still have to follow all the laws. It is urgent, though.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most highest priority I have right now in the Shasta Trinity to do removal of hazard trees along our roads where these fires burn. So
right,
very high priority. Our people are working hard on it. The, you know, our stress levels do go up, that we got to get this done.
And I see a lot of that. I see a lot of the, when these fires go through, you know, you're absolutely right. The first thing you see is the logging companies will go in and they'll start harvesting along the roads to get all the dangerous trees and stuff down. But what about out in the woods? Are those sales processed with, you know, as fast as the ones that are getting rid of the dangerous trees along the roads?
You know, sometimes we'll have less resistance for removing the hazard trees along the roads than the larger units that are off the roads. It just depends on where you're at. It will all vary. It will also vary by where you're at in the United States. Some areas, a lot of areas, of course, don't have the spotted owl. It just happens on the Shasta Trinity. We have one of the last strongholds of that population. That changes the issues.
Yeah.
That elevates it. We also have threatened species of fish, the coho salmon, silver salmon.
The ones we can buy at Costco?
No, you can't.
Yeah,
well,
can.
Yeah, you can. That's mostly a sockeye. But, you know, and we have steelhead in our rivers, where these fires were. So there's those things we can work through, though. It just takes time, and I think we'll be successful in the way we're designing our hazard tree removals this year. We have to be pretty focused, meaning this is what we want to do and get it done, set your priorities, and it has effects on some of our other projects because, you know, you can only do so much with your workforce.
Right. Well, and you have, you know, for the people who don't deal with this very often, the same people sue every forest every time for the most part. I mean, it's pretty repetitive. It isn't
on the
like
same issues, yeah.
I mean, because when most of us think of lawsuits, you think of something someone did to you.
Yeah.
These guys sue just because you've put up a timber sale.
They're suing, alleging violations of the laws I've talked about, the National Environmental Policy Act,
sure,
or the Endangered Species Act. That's what they'll sue the agency on, and we'll have to display how we have correctly met the law and by displaying the facts in our documents. If I have any chinks in the armoring, if a judgment's against us, it turns the whole project away. I just don't fix one paragraph.
Really?
I have to fix the whole thing and start some of that process over.
And a lot of them will try to stop you from reforesting, right? Replanting is now considered bad in some circles.
Oh, maybe in some areas. We do like natural regeneration, but we'll also replant. But, you know, by and large, the concerns are with removal of the trees.
Mm.
And what's your thoughts on replanting? I mean, some folks want it to come back naturally. Some want to replant. I think a classic example is Mount St. Helens, where Weyerhaeuser went in and replanted their property, and now they're already going in and thinning and getting first harvest off of it, where the Forest Service land up there was left to regenerate naturally, and it's just a mess. It's just brush, no trees. I mean, a marketable difference.
Moonscape.
Yeah.
So take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about.
Yeah.
Let's
right. talk about
Moonscape.
Replanting.
Yeah, because you know, you would think that everybody would be in favor of that, but
sure,
apparently that's fallen out of vogue. It's a frustrating world that you work in. I'm glad it's you, not me. Kind of is me a little bit, but not as
it
much
is
as you.
You.
I just hear all the people complaining. You're listening to We the People Radio. We'll be right back with you. You can find us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Everybody knows it's you.
Here comes another great song.
Trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Trees, put them in a tree museum, and they charge the people a dollar and a half just to see them.
That's where you get all your money, isn't it, Dave?
Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pave paradise, put up a parking lot.
Go, Johnny. You're awesome.
I know it.
Welcome back. So, okay. We have 8 minutes and whatever the thing was you told us. Now I feel all this pressure. What were we going to do? We were going to talk about...
Reforestation, how they kind of hate that now. No, so I haven't heard that anybody hates reforestation. You know, remember, it'll really vary the need for reforesting, which we have a lot of reforest after timber sales.
Sure.
We have to reforest the land.
It's a rule.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we do that. So, but depending on the habitat, the forest type, depends on how the forests naturally regenerate or don't. So if you were to harvest a lodgepole, you would generally like to, basically clear cut because it regenerates in full sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
And generally happens after fire or even after, mechanical harvesting by natural seed source.
Well, also, isn't lodgepole kind of a higher elevation species as well? I mean, they're like 5,000 feet and up.
Right. And so ponderosa pine, too, you know, likes full sunlight, and you can replant that, and we do that. We have plantations on the forest that we'll manage. In fact, we're going in and thinning some of those for commercial firewood now. Lumber.
So when you old enough, when you replant, when so say a fire goes through and you replant, do you replant all the species that were there before, or do they typically go in and just, because that's one of the complaints I've heard. I got an argument with a guy one day. He said, they go in and replant all they put in his lodge or ponderosa pine, and it just looks terrible. And what's the actual procedure there? I mean, do they mix it up?
Well, across the, you know, like.
Probably tons of rules, right?
Well, we have silviculturists who their profession is managing forests, and so the rules they follow are let's re-establish that forest based on the habitat type. So we'll plant ponderosa where ponderosa is the habitat type. If it's mixed conifer, meaning Douglas fir and other fir species, we'll plant those trees. But we don't generally replant all the acres of a wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of it does come back naturally, and this year the wildfires didn't kill all the trees. You got to realize that too. Just because we have 190,000 acres burned, all the trees aren't dead.
It stays on the ground and goes through quick. It doesn't kill them.
Yeah. So we have different fire intensities and different amounts of fire killed trees. Our first priority will be to remove the hazard trees along the road, and that's not directly adjacent. That, you know, we'll need to go out 150 feet on each side at least, so that trees aren't going to be able to reach the road when they fall over.
Sure.
And we got to do that quick, again, so we have value. We do support communities in the mills. We have a lot of mills still in Northern California, and it's good to get those trees to the mill. As opposed to other places in the United States, we've lost what we call the infrastructure, the mill capacity. Or there aren't any mills left. They went out of business. So
yeah, what's this? You had 21, 22 mills at one point, now they have one?
One or two, yeah.
Yeah, so
it's a huge difference.
You know, like many industries in the United States, there used to be a lot of real small mills, mom and pop mills. Now it's, you know, obviously they're much larger industrial strength mills that are run economically. They do different species. They cut different types of wood, make different products.
Sure, because all mills don't do all types of trees.
Well, no, most of your mills now cut small logs or small diameter logs. There's a few that do big logs, but again, depending on where those sales are, it may not be economically feasible to cut
them all
big trees and haul them 500 miles to a big log mill. So
Yeah. So, you know, following wildfire, we do a lot of ecological restoration. It's just not planting the trees in some areas or managing for the natural regeneration. We'll do erosion control. We'll put, in some cases, we're replacing small culverts that were undersized to larger ones to allow for fish passage that before fish were stopped at that culvert. So we do a lot of different things. We do a lot of weed control because we're concerned about noxious weeds coming in after fires. You know, it's expensive work, though. And we this year we're challenged because we have, you know, so many acres to deal with.
And out when you're out in, like, the wilderness, the things that are actually classified as wilderness, totally different rules there?
Well, no, a little bit in that...
I know you can't fight fire with anything mechanized.
Well, we can.
So you have to just run out there with, like, shovels and...
No, yes and no. I mean, okay, let me
be clear. It's kind of bad, though, isn't it?
So, dynamite. I saw Big Valley. You take nitroglycerin on a wagon, don't you?
It was in a hearse, if you're talking about that particular Big Valley episode.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, you guys. Hey, the wilderness areas, okay, they're designated by Congress, right? So they're non-mechanized.
Right. Stupid Congress.
But I do have the authority, and through the regional forester, again, my boss, remember, to use mechanized use where appropriate. So this year, with the drought conditions and the fires moving the way they were, I would authorize chainsaws in some places. In some places, I authorized pumps to pump water out of the streams to put in the hoses to fight the fire. We use aerial attack, being helicopters and retardant. But, you know, we prioritize that where there's structures at risk as a priority. So that's not going to be in the wilderness.
Sure.
But we still...
When it's burning towards someone's town,
yeah.
You know.
So if it's something's in the wilderness and it's going to come off the forest into private land and threaten structures, I'll use it there. So we do have the capability there. It's just not all or nothing, but we do have to have the appropriate, I like to use the words, appropriate management response in places. Because, again, it's so expensive. We can't throw everything everywhere in terms of our fire suppression equipment. We just don't have enough to go around.
Okay.
And then what does that do to your, okay, is fire is a separate budget, right? Does that come out of your budget?
Well, we do have a budget for fire suppression, yes. And the big issue in the Forest Service and actually fighting wildfires on federal ground and even on state land, but I'll speak to the federal budget in the Forest Service, is that over half our budget right now is taking up with the cost of fire suppression because it is just escalating. And it has been over the last 10 and 20 years. So now, you know, we're a multiple-use agency. You know, we've been talking a lot about fire and timber.
Yeah,
but
I was going to say we have all the politics in the forest to do the second
hour. We also provide the most outdoor recreation opportunities in the United States.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about that.
On national forests. And
sure.
So a lot of programs, fish, wildlife, recreation, wilderness. So we can talk about that stuff.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, because there's a ton of other stuff you guys do. And I'm curious about the budget, too, just because it's a huge line item and taxpayers should know how
That's
that
right.
works. And most of us, it's a big mystery.
Yeah.
All righty. We're going to come back the second hour with Dave Meyer. He is our forest supervisor here on the Shasta Trinity National Forest. You can find all sorts of good stuff about Dave and our local area here. WeThePeopleRadio.us. Be right back.